I always saw myself as like, how can I create change? How can I create impact? How can I speak for myself? How can I speak in order to call attention to the voices that are never heard?
That is Seattle's Hollis Wong Ware. At age 28, she's accomplished a lot. She's a poet, an activist. She's the lead singer of the band The Flavor Blue. And she sang this famous hook on the Macklemore and Ryan Lewis song White Walls. I talked with Hollis Wong Ware about how Seattle has shaped her and why she pushes to change the city she loves so much.
I don't feel like I would be a musician or be an artist, a working artist, if I hadn't been here. Like,
why
I really.
Not?
Well, I think that, like, I developed my approach and my identity as an artist in Seattle. And then entertainment is a means for that identity to be conveyed and communicated versus focusing on being the best entertainer that I could and not focusing on really that like core development of self that I feel like in Seattle is deeply encouraged because we almost have a absence of industry here. So
that's what I want to know. Is that about starting personal or starting local, or is there something particular about Seattle for you?
The amazing paradox of Seattle is that, you know, in many ways, we do have an absence of industry. But on the flip, we've created some of the most important music globally in the last 100 years. Not even created, but just nurtured. And I just feel like, you know, that nurturing element of Seattle's culture and artistic community is a huge part of why, you know, I feel like I was able to step into the identity of being an artist. I think that it's a fertile land. It almost like is enabled by its isolation, whether that's geographic isolation or industry isolation, but like truly genius work that resonates worldwide. There's like a reason why it was shaped here before it went out. And I love that. I mean, I love being in LA or being on tour with my band and, you know, proudly saying that I'm from Seattle and proudly identifying with this place that I feel has given so much and is in such a period of transition now that it's really important for the inherent and value of art to be continue to be valued as like a core identity of the city.
You've been part of the Seattle music scene for more than 10 years anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have said that you see yourself as an agent of change. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that inherently anybody who identifies as an artist is a change agent in that, you know, to have agency means that you have the autonomy and the vision to move and create in the ways in which you want. And I think, you know, to create art, to generate art, to produce art means also to produce culture. And so I think that kind of, I don't think that it's like super audacious for me to say that I'm a change agent as somebody who identifies as an artist, because I really want to be thoughtful about how what I create impacts the world that I live within. And then
how do you want to impact the world?
I want a more equitable world, and not just as like a buzzword of something that, you know, is a sexy way of saying that, you know, of kumbaya. But I really think that there are strategic ways that artists can engage in culture to move us to a place of justice. And we have a long, long way to go. But if we, within our means as people who create culture, can start bending the arc a little bit more in partnership with the people who are on the ground doing the work. I mean, my identity as an artist is so birthed from my experience working within community. I really, like, I started as a spoken word poet in Youth Speak Seattle, and Youth Speaks as a whole. And the idea of there's no such thing as apolitical art. There's no such thing as art for art's sake. There's always going to be an undertow, a current of something greater behind the words that you speak or what you create and what you put out into the world. So being intentional about that, and like, where do you want to see this world go to, and how can we start pointing it in what we say and what we make and what we put out and how we create videos, or how, you know, the media allowing that to be a touchstone for where we want to go. So that's always kind of been embedded in my notion of what it means to be an artist.
I'm talking with Seattle artist, musician Hollis Wongware. Besides all your other work, you're also internationally famous because of your work with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. My 9-year-old daughter sings, "I got that off black Cadillac midnight drive." How has that visibility affected you?
It's hard for me to answer that question because for me, I know, you know, just sheer numbers wise, I know where my voice has touched and my face has reached, and which can be kind of a trip if you start thinking about it like that. I mean, for me, when I think about the experience working with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis on that album, my takeaway or what impacts me is not really like, oh, I'm like so globally recognized now, which I think in the age of the internet, a lot of that is diluted in my head anyway. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Right. We know Rebecca Black and Charlie Bit My Finger, too.
Ah!
It's having people know who you are is not necessarily the,
mm-hmm.
But you were saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think of the growth, like the personal growth, you know, and the personal journey. And what an amazing opportunity for me to have worked on that project, which wasn't just like me singing on White Walls, but also was like producing the thrift shop video and also like doing a co-write on another song on the album. And I got to kind of flex and grow and strengthen so many of my creative skills. And so that was really a model for me, knowing that like at the end of the day, I'm not interested in being just the voice or just the face. I'm really interested in engaging in what's created in that real process, which is great. Because then what I found was when I was like, oh, I can write songs and I can sing songs, and I go to LA and I'm like, oh, okay, actually, like, the power comes in what you create. It's not just singing a nice song. Where the real power lies is in authoring that and shaping that. And so it was a really great affirmation for me as a cultural creator to remember that it's important. At the end of the day, it's fleeting to be a face or fleeting to be a voice, but what you really want to be is like the heart of it. You want to be the words, you want to be the melody, you want to be that thrust, you know?
And you have that body of work, you have that depth of experience, and yet the Seattle Times, knowing, I mean, you're most famous for working with Macklemore, and he's the super, superstar.
Mm-hmm.
The Seattle Times, in a headline, called you Macklemore's sidekick. Mm-hmm. What frustrated you so much about that?
Well, there's a couple of things. So first of all, so my band, The Flavor Blue, we've been working together for 3 years. We just released our third project, and our publicist reached out to The Seattle Times, and a Seattle Times editor assigned a writer to our story. And we were thrilled because, of course, like, what a great opportunity, you know, Seattle's premier daily paper to write about our music. It felt like a real accomplishment. And, you know, the writer came through to interview us. Macklemore's name was never evoked throughout the entire interview. It was solely focused on our discography, and which isn't to say, like, obviously, and I've said this from jump, I'm not like resistant to talking about my collaborations with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and I'm proud of the work that I've done with them and proud of the growth that I've had. And obviously it has impact on the way that my band is perceived. But I think what was really frustrating to me in that moment was just the gulf between the heart of the article, which really didn't touch on Macklemore at all, and then the way I was labeled and presented through a headline, which was really through like an outside editor that didn't have any, you know, interaction with the content. So I felt like, you know, we created this thing that's being communicated, and then it just kind of got the Macklemore like sticker slapped on it on its way out the door. Furthermore, you know, as I understand it, really like subordinating me to him. I mean, even with a simple word as sidekick, what does it mean? It means to sideline, right? To put to the side, to put as auxiliary to the central figure at hand. So you're kind of like in a work, in a band where my writing, my voice, like our work is centered to marginalize me. Very simply, very efficiently, in a way. But I think that that's so much of the way we operate as a culture is like, ooh, who can we get to validate this? This person doesn't have validity on their own. You know, their validity is only contingent and conditional to this centralized figure that we all have a touch point to. So what they would explain was like, oh, you know, we called you Macklemore's sidekick so that more people would read it. You know, which is a complicated thing to say, right? Because what you're saying is that people are only interested in your work if you are conditional to this figure. And then you can go into the analysis.
Couldn't she say that's objectively true, whether we like it or not?
Well, I think that there's a way of going about it where you can dignify my creative relationship with Macklemore and say she's his collaborator. I mean, it's, to me, it's like, first of all, it's like if the article had been significantly about our collaborative relationship, I totally would have understood it. But there was a discord, right? There was a true gap between the way that the headline was and then what the article contained, which was actually wholly interested in the work of my band. I'm very proud of the work that I've done with Macklemore and Ray Lewis. And so I think at the end of the day, I need to stand up for myself to demonstrate that just because I work with two famous white dudes does not mean that I am conditional upon them for my own success. And so that was really frustrating, was the explanation that I received essentially affirmed that I am only significant because of my affiliation with and work with them. And furthermore, that I am, you know, that by asserting myself, I'm taking up too much space. You know, we have to be careful. Again, as an artist, I feel like I have cultural, social agency. Writers, too, have that same agency. They craft the words that we use to communicate and thus shape our realities. And when you do something as simple, you know, and as thoughtless, truly, as calling somebody a sidekick, you are inherently devaluing their agency.
So here's an example. We talked about you being an agent of change. Mm-hmm. What change do you want to see, or have you seen through that? That was a pretty public back and forth,
sure,
around sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
So what change do you think that has brought about?
To me, I just want people to be more thoughtful. It's one of those situations where it's like you look at an institution and you want it to stay relevant and you want it to be on point and you don't want to see it slipping. And it's not something where it's like I find joy in stirring up drama. But I also don't feel like we can let institutions that truly have impact on the way that our society and we as a community within Seattle, as a city, understands itself, like you can't let those institutions slide with BS. And if we're not going to speak out about it, it's just going to keep perpetuating itself.
Have you seen any evidence that back and forth did make change?
I think for Seattle, like, I think this is a big conversation. And I know that you guys have had Ijeoma Oluo in here, who has been really a leader.
And her brother.
Me, yeah. And Aham, yeah, totally. I mean, like, they, you know, really calling attention to, like, is the status quo, or is the people who are in power and editorial power in the media, are they so afraid of looking internally and seeing who they really are? Or will they always continue to be defensive? And to my mind, if you continue to defend, you're just going to defend yourself into a pit. Like, you're going to defend yourself until you're no longer actually have 2 feet on the ground. You know, like, I feel that there is an imperative for those who create media to look at their composition, to look internally within themselves and see the social disparity of power, like really commit to a power analysis, like who has power within this situation? How are we understanding what diversity even means? Do we just want to be comforted with the presence of people of color or are we really interested in learning and releasing and relinquishing some of our power to make sure that moving forward, what's represented in the media is true and speaks to all, for the majority of media that's created?
What is it about you that change is so important to you? Because a lot of us, we just, you know, do our jobs and right, do our thing. Even some artists are more about, I make my art. It's what I like. Mm-hmm. It's fine if other people like it. I'm glad.
Right.
But what is it about you that you want to rattle the cage?
Well, I just don't feel like to me, every single person, this is the power of it. And that's why I don't think that it's a spectacular thing that I call, you know, that I see myself as a change agent, because I think we're all change agents. And the idea is that there is no such thing as being benign In fact, that's like a fallacy that's promoted by the society that we live within, that you can just be cool, wake up, go to work, come home, and that you're not actually impacting the way that our society works and is functioning, because that means that we are being willfully ignorant to the incredible, like, you know, disparity of resources that or the systems that really that are so deeply troubling that obviously we need some sort of mechanism so that we're not, you know, that we don't internalize and just feel like completely like weighted down by the world.
I like that. The premise of my question is off. Everybody's making change.
Everybody's making change. And by doing nothing, that's something. I think that people are sometimes afraid. I don't want to do the wrong thing. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to look stupid. I'm not a bad person. But it's easier for me to say nothing than to say something. But that's so vain. If you're in a position where you can even choose that option, you have privilege. And what? How exciting, how like energizing is it to think about activating your privilege? I mean, that's why I feel like a lot of the conversation is people just kind of, and that's why we talk about white fragility, right? Or like male fragility is like, oh no, like don't burst the bubble of like the sanctity of my privilege. But like, how much more exciting is it if you think about what you have and like, yo, how can I make things happen? It's way more exciting to think about things happening than not, right? One would think. You know, I have a ton of privilege in my life. And it's for me, it's always about doing that assessment. It's like, how can I leverage this? Like, who else can I put on? Like, whether that's literally on a stage as a performer, or who can I have a conversation with and come up with a strategic plan about how that person's work can be amplified? I'm so motivated by that. I think it's so much more fun. Really, it's fun work. You know what I mean? To work with other people and figure out how you can push the dial forward versus just letting things be chill and just being like, ah, can't do it. Whatever. I don't know. Why not be active? You know, and I think people, you know, it's like CrossFit of the mind and the heart. You know, just like, why not push the pedal to the metal? And there's so many ways to plug in. Like, everybody has so many opportunities. It's where there's infinite opportunities to figure out how one can activate themselves to make this world a better place. I know that sounds like so like highfalutin, but I think it's about like really stepping outside oneself and one's pride. Think about, how can I really see where I fit in the grand scheme of things? If I just moved here to Seattle to take a job, what does that really mean in terms of where I sit in the spectrum of the city and its development? And then how can I be an agent of change moving forward versus somebody that just sits by? There's no such thing as like benevolent bystander. You know what I mean? Like, I think that silence is an action. And I think that you can choose to be silent and that's what you're doing. Or you can choose to speak up or to leverage what you have to move towards like a world where all are heard and all are valued.
Hollis Wong Ware, Seattle musician, poet, producer, activist. Her band is called The Flavor Blue.